As you well know, my ministry is built on the presupposition that there's no greater commandment than we are to love our God and love our people. When a young lawyer came up to Christ in Matthew 22, he was tempting Jesus to ask what the greatest commandment is, and we know what Christ's reply was. To love the Lord thy God and to love your neighbor, love your people. He said, on that hangs all the laws and the prophets. I understand that somebody may not see it that way. I'm telling you the way I see it. That tells me that this is the great, everything hinges on those two things. If you don't have those two things right, nothing else matters. So we're going to look over here on the subject of being faithful. We've got a verse up on the screen. I've read this many times before, so it's nothing new, but we're going to look at it again. Matthew 13, verses 3 to 8. Behold, a sower went out to sow. And as he sowed, some fell to the wayside. And the birds came and devoured them. Some fell on stony places, where they did not have much earth. And they immediately sprung up, because they had no depth of earth. But when the sun was up, they were scorched, and because they had no root, they withered away. And some fell among thorns, and the thorns sprang up and choked them. Others fell on good ground, yielded a crop, some 100-fold, some 60, and some 30. We are being told here by Christ that we need to understand that we have to make this personal commitment to faithfulness. If we want to withstand all the things and all the pressures that are going to come upon us, we have to be committed to faithfulness. And over the years, I have seen many people who mouth the words of faithfulness, but time went by and proved they were not able to remain faithful. They could not endure the contest. Now in this passage here, we see these three kinds of seeds. Maybe four. The seeds that fell that the birds devoured immediately. They never had time to take root. Those are people you probably maybe witnessed to, talked to. I recall one girl I worked with years ago, and we got talking about identity, and she was really enthralled by it. Thought, wow, this is great. And really excited. It just so happened that when noon came, I worked in the real estate office, she had lunch with her pastor. And I don't know what the conversation was in the car, and she probably expressed some of these thoughts to her pastor of what she just heard. I just know that immediately after lunch, she didn't want anything to do with it. She wouldn't even discuss it after lunch. So I'm assuming that she would be this person who the fowls devoured it immediately. But the others are people who really tried to do something. They actually began to put out roots. But they were on stony ground, and it withered up. Some were on thorny ground, or fell among thorns, or were choked. These are people, perhaps, who had the intention of being faithful. They just weren't able to be faithful. We all here are required to be faithful because we are facing enormous perplexities of problems and issues in our life, in our nation. There's an enemy that has come upon us and come into our midst that seeks to devour, destroy us, destroy our people, destroy all those things we love and all those things we hold dear and all those things we embrace, all those things we cherish, and wants to destroy those things. But there is another enemy that most people don't think about. I have spoken of this in the past, so you probably all know what I'm going to say. But some people may not have heard, somebody may be listening on the internet, may say, and I talk about the enemy that can destroy us more than any other enemy. Some people might say, well, you know, if maybe it's the Negroes, and the Negroes are our greatest concern, the devouring of sheep. We are in this movement because we care about these sheep. We care about these people of God. And when I talk about this movement, What is the movement? We hear this phrase. I'm kind of digressing for a second. We hear this phrase, the movement. What is that? And I look at it maybe, the way I look at it may not be the way you look at it, and that's okay. I'm just giving my viewpoint and my thoughts on it. When I speak of the movement, I'm not talking about people who believe in the cause. Because lots of people maybe believe in the things we believe in. I'm not talking about them. When I'm talking about the movement, I'm talking about the movers and shakers. Those who you might call the shepherds. And when I call the state of shepherds, I'm not necessarily talking about preachers. I'm talking about people who are shepherds, the movers and shakers of these issues and concerns we have. And just having knowledge of what's going on, as many people do, doesn't make them a shepherd. I've come across many, many people quite knowledgeable about the issues facing our people. It doesn't make them a shepherd. It doesn't make them a shepherd unless they're somebody who takes upon the personal responsibility to take this message to our people. Because what does a shepherd do? A shepherd loves the sheep, doesn't he? A shepherd cares for the sheep. And I'm not just talking about creatures. I'm talking about just people, okay, who are in the movement. There's someone who loves the sheep. They care for the sheep. A shepherd cares for the sheep. A shepherd feeds the sheep. When the sheep are injured, or when sheep need direction, the Bible said the shepherd leads the sheep to still water. But what else the shepherd does is when danger approaches, the shepherd fights the wolf. He fights off the wolf because that's the job of a shepherd, to protect the sheep. And but some shepherds, or some people call themselves shepherds, aren't shepherds. You might say, we always talk about wolves in sheep's clothing. And we also have to watch out for sheep in shepherd's clothing. There are people who are sheep who are calling themselves shepherds. If you know what I'm saying. So some shepherds don't want to fight the wolf because they say, I'll get my clothes dirty. It'll get my reputation dirty. I'll lose my standing in the community. I won't be invited to the ministerial breakfasts. Some will say, well, it's not my job. It's not my job to fight off the enemy. That's God's job. It's not my job. I remember a young child, 10, 12 years old, attending a church, where there was a fellow there who, quite adamantly, talked about we should not be involved in issues of America. There was a house meeting my folks used to go to. I did like this guy, though, because he did teach a lot. His favorite song, the song that I like, Stepping on the Higher Ground. You all heard that song? I want to sing for you, but I can't. I can't remember the words. I'm moving on to higher ground, new heights I'm gaining every day. I see John shaking his head, so he's familiar with the song. But if a person not willing to fight off the wolf, then he shouldn't be calling himself shepherds. Does it make sense? We had a person here a few years ago, he wanted to be a leader in the nights with us. But then he was paranoid, but he might find out. Well, I can understand that. I can understand somebody having those concerns about their employment and job. I understand that. But don't try to pass yourself off as a shepherd. Just that. We all face huge wolves attacking our sheep, attacking our people each and every day. And the wolf comes in many forms. So like this is somebody would say, well, the Negroes, these are the big things we're facing. And that's a problem, I understand that. But that's not really what had destroyed the faithfulness of many people. It isn't Negroes. And somebody might think, well, Mexicans, that's a problem we're faced by all these Mexicans and all these illegal aliens, and even the legal aliens moving in the country, that's a huge problem we're facing. That drives people away from the movement. And then, of course, there's people who are concerned about about the Jews and the media and so on. And they say the Jews control everything. They control the media. They control the politicians. They control television. They control all the reporters. And some people think they control their mother-in-law. And they think that so much power is in the hands of the Jews. And it drives them into silence. because they're afraid. Well, that's okay. I understand that. I understand some people don't have it. But don't pass yourself off as a shepherd. Because we're talking about people in the movement. People want to be faithful. The greatest enemy, the most powerful enemy we face as a people are not Negroes, are not Jews, are not the media, not the FBI agents or anybody like that. The biggest struggle we have, the biggest struggle we face is our inability to remain faithful. It's our inability as a people to remain faithful. Because we all face issues every single day. And we wonder. And we fail. And it's just like somebody on a diet, maybe. They're on a diet, they do good for a few weeks, and then they went out and had that big banana slip. Oh, they want to give up. Well, you just give up. You just get up and start again. The same with faithfulness. You know, we all fail. All times we may wish we would have been a little stronger and endured the concept a little more persistence. And we didn't, and we beat ourselves, but you just pick up and keep moving. You stay focused on the issues before us. And over the years, I've seen people who confuse knowledge with faithfulness. Knowledge has nothing to do with faithfulness. It has nothing to do with how much knowledge a person has and issues. That has nothing to do with faithfulness. The faithfulness is something that where you take that knowledge and use it to become faithful and use it to combat the enemy. And so the biggest struggle we have, is the need to remain faithful during all these trying times that we have. Weakness is one of the characteristics we despise the most of people. Not physical weakness, but people who are morally weak. People who are spiritually weak. Because there are people who appear to have brute strength and powerful, and they feel like they can knock down brick walls, and yet they're morally weak people. And we sometimes confuse that with people. But you look at them and you think, oh, this guy's big, this guy's tough. And yet he's morally and he's spiritually weak. And then we've seen other people who look frail, and yet we know that they will not bow. They will not bow. And one of the people I like to think of that is Karen Ford. Some of you knew her, some of you didn't. Her picture's on the back. But she was the wife of Ralph Ford. And I know her history. And I know the trying circumstances that they endured in California when their home was picketed by blacks and Jews and so forth. The electricity was turned off by the order of the city government. All kinds of afflictions came upon that family. And Karen Ford was strong. Karen Ford was resolute. She was a spiritually and morally strong person. Where other people weaken and fall and collapse. So the greatest roadblock, the greatest obstacle, the greatest mountain before us is in this issue of taking white Christian revival is whether we can overcome the moral and spiritual weakness that wants to suck us all in and destroy us all, who wants to take and weaken us, who wants to burn up the roots like the seeds that fell upon stony ground, who wants to choke us out with the cares of the world like the seeds that fell from the thorns. Over the years, I've seen many people who were involved in this struggle, and many of them I learned to call my dear friends. But then I've seen others who said they would be strong and faithful who could not remain strong and faithful. I don't know why. They just couldn't do it. They did not absorb the right information. They did not plug themselves with the right people. Plug themselves with the strength that can make them strong. They didn't do it. From their testimony, they would be strong and faithful to the end. And yet, they weren't able to remain strong and faithful. They failed. The Bible tells us it's easier for a man to conquer a city, to control a city, than it is for him to control his own life. It's easier It's easier to take a city or a government and control it than for a person to be able to control his own flesh, his own sinful nature. And yet, some people are able to do it, and yet many people can't. Conquering our flesh, conquering our weakness, is the hardest thing that any of us will ever attempt to do. There's nothing that will be any harder for you to do in life than to be able to control and conquer your own selfish and sinful nature. Over the years, I've seen people in this racial struggle with enter it with excitement and eagerness to do something important, and yet in a short time they were gone. The words of loyalty and dedication were short-lived. They could not endure the contest. They could not conquer their weakness. They wanted to remain strong. They wanted to be used by God. I don't doubt that. I've seen people who sincerely wanted to be used by God, but they couldn't be used by God because they're too weak. We've all seen those pictures that I put on the screen before. You've got a side cutters. One is a clean side cutter, new and fresh and ready to be used. The other side cutter is saying, please use me, please use me. And you all remain in the toolbox and never get used because he's not usable. And that's how it is with our lives. People so often want to be used by God. They want to be used in a great holy mission. They want to be a tool that God can use. But they haven't been able to overcome their weakness. They haven't been able to overcome alcohol. They haven't been able to overcome drugs. They haven't been able to overcome their language, their foul mouth. They haven't been able to overcome their gossiping. They haven't been overcome their judgment of others. They haven't been able to overcome their own body cleanliness. They just stink. You know what I mean? And they say they want to be used by God. But you have to prepare yourself. If you want to be, if we see this great mission, and as shepherds we see our people being destroyed, we want to be a tool that God can use. And we have to prepare ourselves for that. We can't fool ourselves into thinking that it doesn't matter, because it does matter. So people have excuses why they are not faithful. They couldn't get anybody to listen. There's no one around who seemed to care. They were afraid of losing their job. They lost their friends. They thought the FBI was going to sneak up on them in the middle of the night. They thought somebody might do something and get them in trouble. Their family talked about them behind their back or refused to talk to them at all. And so they become weak. Of course, they don't consider themselves to be weak, but slowly they slide back into the world. At what point does the sun set? When you imagine the sun going down in the evening, at what point is it set? You look at it and it's just so gradual. At what point does somebody become fat? At what point does somebody become lose their hair? Was it the first time their hair falls out or when it completely bald? At what time? These things happen to our life so gradual, without even notice, without fanfare, that they come upon us and consume us or overtake us. It's the same thing with our lives. That's why it's so important we protect every aspect of our lives, everything we say, everything we do, everybody we come in contact with, everybody we associate with. We have to be careful to protect what we are, because otherwise we slowly are pulled, drawn into the unfaithful. And it happens, and it happens many times. Somebody may say, well, I'm still against sodomy, I'm still against race mixing. Just because I don't hang around anymore, don't come around anymore, don't associate anymore, don't do this and don't do that, I'm still against those things. As if that's some great mark. It's not enough to be against race mixing or against homosexuality. That's not enough. Some people think it is, but it's not. When I play ping pong with somebody, an example I've used in the past, that might be my opponent. I may play ping pong against Jason. We're not just these sodomites, these homosexuals, they don't want to destroy our people and our children. We're not just against them. We have to hate it with a gut hatred. It has to be in our gut. Race mixing and sodomy, that's something we're just against. We have to understand and have a gut hatred for that thing that will destroy us. Preacher might say, well, that's not nice. It's not nice. We're going to have peace in our heart, preachers would tell us. We're supposed to have peace. How many times did you turn on the television and say, come to Jesus, have peace? You hear it all the time, have peace. But a Christian should not have peace in his heart. A Christian should, when you see what happened to our nation, what happened to our people, if you have peace, there's something wrong with you. You should have anguish in your heart. If you look at the flood of illegal or aliens, I keep saying illegal, but just aliens coming to our homeland. If you look at the homosexual parading in our streets, in the television, in the movies. If we look at these things and see how our families and our children and our homeland have been destroyed and shoved into the toilet. If we look at these things, if we have peace, there's something wrong with us. Now, many people don't care. I understand that. But if you can have peace, when you see what's happening to our people, there's something wrong. I love Jesus Christ. I love our faith. And because of that, I don't have peace. I have anguish. I have anger. All night long. Throughout the day. When I see what's happening to our people. I'm sickened. I feel ill. Anger will lose in my heart. And I'm tormented through it. When I see how our people have become wicked and perverse. Oh, I certainly have peace with my relationship to Christ. But when I look at our nation, I feel like Jeremiah the prophet, who's called the weeping prophet, who wailed bitter tears and saw what has happened to the city, the holy city. Too many people have struggled to conquer the enemy that is before them and not have enough time to conquer the enemy within them so that they can remain faithful. 1 John 2:15-17 says, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. I want you to understand that we are on a holy mission. I believe the shepherd, I don't know about the sheep. The sheep don't know. They're just, bah, okay. But those who understand, those who see what's happening, see what the devourer coming to devour the sheep, we need to understand we are on a holy mission. The shepherds, you and I, have been called to feed the sheep, nourish sheep, care the sheep, and fight the wolf off to protect the sheep. That's what the shepherds do. We're on a holy mission. I think we're just a group, as some people think, a group of angry people who don't like race mixes or or that we just don't like those faggots on TV. Why them all go back into the closet? Don't like the aliens come back home. If that's all we are, we need to evaluate the whole affair. It's not just being against something that's out there, but it's the love of the sheep, the love of the people that were for it. That has to motivate you. If it doesn't motivate you, there's nothing wrong. We're on a holy mission. A mission demanded by the very counsels of Almighty God. Now I understand that if someone is not a Christian, then they might say, well, I'm not on a holy mission. Well, if you're not a Christian and you're not on a holy mission, then maybe you're just on a mission. Like going and getting a loaf of bread. But if you understand, then you understand you're on a holy mission. A holy mission to reach out to our people. A holy mission to awaken the spirit of our people. A holy mission to reach the soul of our brothers and sisters. A holy mission to touch the heart of a young mother to provide a future for a young child, and to give hope to an old man or a woman about old age. If you're a Christian, then you understand that one day God looked down from the heavens, and He touched your heart, and He whispered your name into your ear. And you felt the calling that here is something I must do. And you can't explain it. You cannot explain a holy mission any more than you explain what a flower looks like to a blind person. Or any more than you explain the difference between the roar of a Harley Davidson and the roar of a lion to a deaf person. You can't explain those things. But you feel it in your heart. Because you're a tool that God is picking up and beginning to use to reach our people. I like to use the analogy of the messy room. You've heard me do it before. Parent goes into a room. Jason goes in the room. He tells Caleb and Jason, clean up your room. And the obedient child will clean up the room. Why? Why does the obedient child clean up the room when he's told by his father to do so or his mother to do so? Because he recognizes the authority and sovereignty of his father. Now, Jason, what would you think if you come back later and the room was still messy? And you looked at Caleb and Tate and said, why is your room messy? What would you think if they said, Dad, we know the room is messy, and we've been here reading the Bible and trying to find out what the spiritual meaning is to your commandment? What would you think?
You'd be upset.
You'd be upset. It's a simple commandment. And when they recognize your authority, right, then they obey. We are a many-membered body. The Bible refers to us as a many-membered body. Paul refers to us as the church. And we're looking at this church here, okay, individually now. But the church is this many-membered body of Christ. And we're told by Paul that in this many-membered body, there are many people doing many things. He likens it to the body, and our whole body, the tongue and the mouth and the toes and feet, ears and so on. We are a many-membered body. And as a body, we have a commission. We have a commission to be a light to the world. Not to put a basket over it so nobody can see it, but a light. Because light penetrates. Goes forth. It does not keep its place. It invades darkness. It doesn't settle for darkness. It invades darkness. That's why you go to a room. You never go to a room and turn on the darkness. You only go in there and turn on the light. So we have a mission. And if we in this mission are going to get our room clean, we need to understand that we need to do something. I helped clean up the room by preaching. Brendan helped clean up the room by cutting the grass around here, helping to care for things. Shelby helps clean up the room when she works in the office. Amanda helps clean up the room when she teaches Sunday school. Bob helps clean up the room when he works on the internet. Lori helps clean up the room when she working to help keep the church clean. Shelby and Cherry help clean up the room through their Music for Heritage Connection. All working together, as and there's other people too. All working, you get the idea. All working together for one objective, to clean up the room. Everybody doing something different. But they're all our shepherds. All our people taking on the personal responsibility that they're going to remain faithful and they're going to get the room clean. They're going to do the job. Why? Because they recognize the authority of God. They recognize the sovereignty of God. They know that they are tools in the hand of God. And so they're going to clean up the room. And there are others who may not physically be able to work to clean up the room, but when they pay their tithe, make their contribution, because there's a difference. They're helping provide the means to clean up the room. In a sense, they're helping to buy the vacuum cleaners. They're helping to buy the window polish. They're helping to buy the vacuum bags. They're helping to clean. They're helping to do the things to get the room clean. And in this case, they're helping pay for internet. They help pay for other stuff. So everybody who understands this holy mission, understands they, if they want to be a tool to remain faithful, they have to take on the responsibility to do what? To clean up the room. Don't care how many Bible verses a person knows, if they're not helping to clean up the room, they're not recognizing the authority of God. Throughout our country, there are many, many people who are helping to clean up the room. Not just us, there are many people. But I've seen too many people over the years who complain about how messy the room is, but don't do anything to clean it up. Do you know why we're here today? Do you know why we were able to enter these doors and sit in these chairs? Do you know why I was able to stand up here today? You know why we're able to do the things we do to take this message out to people? Because over the years and over the centuries, devout Christian men and women who are spiritually and morally strong, were faithful, even unto death. Throughout the centuries, going back beyond recorded history, there have been men and women who have stood faithful and strong and have brought us to this hour in which we now live. Over the years, I've seen thousands who have started on this noble path, and yet they could not conquer their flesh. They could not conquer their weakness. And soon the day came upon them when their spirit was shaken and they departed to go off in another direction. Brothers who cannot clean up their foul life. The message I want you to take home with you is to be faithful. It is absolutely imperative that you have made a commitment to engage in the struggle for race, faith, and homeland, and that you remain faithful as a tool to do whatever you can do to make the whole body work together to take the message of White Christian Revival to the nation. In other words, clean up the room. You want to be more dedicated? You want to make a difference? You want to be the tool that God can use, or the tool that just left in the toolbox is it's not usable? It all depends on how bad you want to win. There's a story, I'll try to make it very quickly. I've told the story before. A young man comes to Socrates, and Socrates, he said, "Socrates, I want you to teach me teach me what I need to have, what I need to do to grasp and understand life, and to understand the purpose of life." And the story says Socrates took this young man down to a river bank, and he took him down there. He grabbed a hold of him, he pushed him under the water, and he held him under the water. And the young man struggled, and he held him under the water. He struggled again. He held him under the water, and finally, when the young man was about to die and drown, Socrates pulled him up out of the water. Socrates says, when you want truth and understand as bad as you want the next breath of air. That's us. How bad do we want to win this thing? Do we want it that bad? Is it important enough that our silly little habits, the silly things we do that get in our way, we want it bad enough that those things don't count anymore? How bad do we really want to win this thing? How bad do we really want to be a tool that God can use? How bad do we want it? It's not just a struggle of earthly politics. This is a struggle of the very life and soul of our people. It's not a struggle of who's going to win an election. This is a struggle of the eternal consequences of our nation, of our people. Now, some people don't see it the way I do, and I understand. I'm just telling you the way I see it. In the face of this rebellion that has come upon our people, the first thing we must do is build the strength of faithfulness. We can't go into this battle unprepared. The Apostle Paul says, take on the full armor of God. That's why people in the white nationalist movement don't understand Christianity. They're going into battle unprepared. They despise the same enemy I despise. They're just not prepared. the Apostle Paul said to us, put on the whole armor of God. We have been called. You wouldn't be here. Somewhere down in your spirit, you heard God call your name. You can't explain it. You just know. You just know that you're like a square peg cut in a round hole. You look at this nation, I don't want to fit in what I see. I know that in this day it's difficult for someone to understand their duty. Robert E. Lee says that no one can do more than their duty and no one should consider doing less. No man can do more than their duty. No man should consider doing less. In closing, the Bible tells us that we can be overcomers. The Bible tells us that overcomers will get a crown of life. Are we prepared to be an overcomer? Are we prepared to overcome our shortcomings, overcome our flesh? Are we prepared to overcome those things getting in our way? Are we prepared to clean up our act, as they say? To take the tool and polish it and clean it and get the rust off and make ourselves usable? Are we willing to do those things? Or are we just going to walk away from our holy mission? Are we just going to walk away because it's just too hard? If we want to be an overcomer, in closing, if we want to be an overcomer, then we have to clean up our lives. And then we can clean up the room. Our Father, we thank you for this day and your blessings. We ask that everyone here will stop and consider for a moment. How can their life be used for God? We always think about what other people are doing. But stop for a moment. Everyone here, your heads closed, eyes bowed, or eyes bowed, closed, heads bowed. Stop and consider. How can I be used more in the struggle to reach our people? How can I be a greater tool? How can I be more effective? How can my language, how can my habits, how can my conduct, how can my life be used in a better way to reach our people? Help us, Father, remain strong and faithful and make ourselves committed to this great and holy mission to reach down into the hearts of our people. Help us to become strong that we may fight off this war, because we recognize that you are our God, our Master, our authority. You are our sovereign. We obey you, but we seek to obey no other. We ask in your holy and precious name. Amen.
Thank you, Pastor Rob. If you'd like to get more information regarding our church services here as well as our conferences, you can write to us at Christian Revival Center, P.O. Box 602, Harrison, Arkansas 72601. That's Christian Revival Center, P.O. Box 602, Harrison, Arkansas 72601. Or you can email us at revival@southshore.com. And that, we have John Lee up, and we're going to end with one more song.
Oh,